The state of Washington Court of Appeals, Division 1, is now in session. The Honorable Elizabeth Bowen.
Good morning, everyone. Please be seated. Mr. Granis, good morning, sir. Mr. Fine, good morning. You ready?
Yes.
How much time would you like to reserve?
I'll reserve 3 minutes for rebuttal. May it please the court, Casey Granis representing Shannon Traylor on appeal. There are two community custody conditions here that are unconstitutionally vague and should be stricken from the judgment and sentence.
Just for the record, did you provide us with copies of the scoring sheet? Is this your submission?
That's in the second case I'll be arguing today, in the France case. This case just involves the community custody conditions, and one of the conditions prohibits Mr. Traylor from frequenting establishments where alcohol is the chief commodity for sale. The second condition at issue prohibits Mr. Traylor from possessing drug paraphernalia. There are two prongs to any vagueness challenge. If either prong goes unmet, then the condition or the issue the law at issue must fall. The first is whether ordinary people can understand what conduct is prohibited and what's not. That's the first prong. The second prong is whether ascertainable standards of guilt are provided to prevent arbitrary enforcement. And turning to the first condition at issue here, whether establishments where alcohol is a chief commodity for sale, that condition fails both of those prongs. Again, ordinary people must be able to understand what establishment has alcohol for the chief commodity for sale in order to avoid running afoul of this condition. But the way this condition is worded doesn't provide that fair notice that's required by the vagueness standards. I provided several examples in my briefing. For example, how was one to know, an ordinary person to know before entering any given restaurant, market, grocery store, stadium, sports stadium, whether alcohol is the chief commodity for sale there? And really the focus here is the chief commodity language, because one of the big problems here is by what standard is one to measure whether a commodity, whether alcohol is the chief one for sale there? That can be done in various ways, probably ways I haven't even thought of yet, but some of the ways that
Maine.
Well, that's part of what's going on here. Maine, okay, it could mean Maine, yeah. I mean, that would be one way to read that. But then what does Maine mean? For example, how are we to determine, again, whether something is the main commodity for sale, the chief? Is it 51% of something that's sold there? Is it 20%, but that 20% is more than other items that are sold there? Is that the way it's determined?
Well, what if it said, no, you can't enter any place that has any alcohol for sale? How is the person going to know whether there's any alcohol for sale in that circumstance either?
Yeah, that's quite true. I mean, that just highlights the vagueness problem here. I mean, for example, a person could think about, okay, I'm going to enter this restaurant here, not sure whether there's alcohol sold, for example, let alone whether the alcohol that may be sold there is the chief commodity there. So this just highlights the vagueness problem here.
Doesn't part of the analysis have to include common sense, common ordinary individuals would understand a restaurant
Well, I would distinguish between the point of having a restaurant or a purpose in having a restaurant versus the objective fact of whether alcohol in that particular restaurant is the chief commodity for sale. You know, I think, going with the common sense analogy, I think it's common sense that, for example, profit margins on food in a restaurant are razor thin. Where the restaurants make their money is on beverages, and especially alcohol, where there's a really high markup. So, for example, if sales receipts or profit margin is the standard by which we're looking at whether something is the chief commodity there, then a given restaurant could fall under the prohibition. But the main point, though, is that, again, we're juggling which standards are to be used here. There's different ways to look at it. And as I pointed out in the briefing, let's say, for example, sales volume is the measure we're going to use to determine whether alcohol is a chief commodity in a given establishment. Sales volume. Well, sales volume isn't static. It changes all the time, day to day, week to week, month to month, year to year. Well, the rule that I'm proposing for Mr. Traylor is that just get rid of this condition. But if the states, if looking at what this prohibition is really aimed at, if the state is saying that we don't want Mr. Traylor hanging out in bars, then the condition that said prohibits him from entering bars, that's totally understandable to an ordinary person. They know whether they're going into a bar, and it's common sense that the bar is going to have alcohol where the chief commodity is for sale. That would be an example. But as written, this condition is way too broad. I'll turn.
Counselor, you've taken on two constitutional challenges here. You, I take it, intentionally not challenging the statute, or don't think there is a statutory challenge to be made, because we usually get to that first.
We're talking about the drug paraphernalia issue.
Well, both of the conditions, you're not, you're.
These are crime related prohibitions. Yes, intentionally. Yeah, these are crime related prohibitions. There's no challenge there. That's why I went to the Constitution. And turning briefly to the paraphernalia condition that is challenged here as well on vagueness grounds. That's especially susceptible to the second prong of the vagueness test, which is does it prevent arbitrary enforcement? And the point made in Ball, which suggests not an identical but a similar prohibition, is equally applicable here, which is that an inventive community corrections officer can find most anything to be an item of drug paraphernalia, including a sandwich bag. That same reasoning applies here, too, and that's why that condition must fall. Thank you.
Good morning, Your Honor, and may it please the Court. I'm Seth Lyon, Deputy Prosecuting Attorney for Snohomish County, representing the respondent, the State of Washington. The trial court described the alcohol condition as a standard condition. It was unobjected to at that level, and it
appeared. But was there a drug or alcohol issue in the underlying crime?
Well, the defendant took the position at sentencing that his crime was related to drug abuse, specifically cocaine abuse, and he was the one who asked for a sentence under the drug offender sentencing alternative and persuaded the trial court that he was a drug offender. Well, this condition now has been imposed in the past, and there is no history of overzealous community corrections officers using it to violate people who have entered restaurants. They're trying to bring in business records to show what proportion of food sales or liquor sales are sold in a restaurant.
But you could tie it to a liquor license and be a little bit more definitive.
There could be other ways to phrase this, yes. And perhaps if an objection had been at the trial level, the trial court might have thought about trying to make it clear. But the question is not whether it's perfect. You know, there's no condition that's absolutely specific in every circumstance. The question is whether, despite the existence of some gray areas, in general, it provides fair warnings and standards for reasonable enforcement. And, you know, if you get into a gray area, if a person is, if a violation is brought for somebody going into a restaurant which sells too much alcohol, according to the community corrections officer, then you can have an as-applied challenge. And you always have the rule that a person cannot be held in violation for something that a reasonable person would not have viewed as a violation. So there is protection from overzealous enforcement. Of course, there's no reason to think that trial judges are going to tolerate that. And if they do, this court can deal with the problem. This condition is very similar to the one that was upheld in State v. Ball, which prohibited the defendant from frequenting establishments whose primary business pertains to sexually explicit or erotic materials. And there you're facing the same kind of problem, which is businesses don't sell just one item. You know, there are, you know, there are liquor stores that incidentally sell things which are not alcohol, like mixers, and there are convenience stores which incidentally sell alcohol, and to an ordinary person, they're not the same. And in the same way, there are erotic bookstores that incidentally sell non-erotic items, and there are convenience stores that also sell erotic magazines. And again, they are not the same, and an ordinary person can reasonably distinguish between them, just as the very similar condition in Ball provides sufficient standards. This one as well provides sufficient standards. And no reasonable person who can true this standard is prohibiting someone from going into 7-Eleven or going into a restaurant. And if we brought a violation against someone because they went into a restaurant and then brought forward the restaurant's business records to try to demonstrate what share of their sales were alcohol, and I'm pretty confident that the trial judge would laugh at us, and I think if it ever reached this level, which it wouldn't, you would laugh at us as well. That's not what this condition means. It's not a reasonable interpretation. As for the paraphernalia condition, you know, this says drugged paraphernalia. Drug paraphernalia is a phrase that is defined by statute. It is a phrase.
Why not refer to the statute then, so that we're not arguing about it?
I mean, again, you know, if somebody had raised a concern about vagueness, the court could well have said drug paraphernalia as defined by statute.
Okay, but you're going to use this over and over again. Why not tie it to the statute so we're not having the argument?
If, you know, if this is considered to be a legitimate issue, absolutely we can do that. You know, it doesn't seem like a subject that has been considered a problem in the past and wasn't at the trial level in this case. You know, there's no difference between the ordinary meaning of the term drug paraphernalia and the legal meaning. And, you know, the case it cited about said, paraphernalia that can be used to consume, package, etc., drugs. That's a different concept than drug paraphernalia. That can be almost anything, but a sandwich bag sitting in an unopened box in your grocery shelf, or a sandwich bag used to hold a sandwich, is not drug paraphernalia. A sandwich bag used to hold drugs is drug paraphernalia. And I think the Valencia Ball case sort of illustrates the danger of, you know, requiring the courts to get overly precise. One way you could read that case was that the court tried to write in the statutory definition but got it wrong. You know, there's a risk about putting in too much language and leaving out things or making a mistake that confuses it. You know, the phrase drug paraphernalia is a clear one. It's one that's commonly misunderstood. And again, if there are areas of ambiguity, they can be dealt with in the particular instance. And finally, you know, with regard to remedy, if the court thought that one of these were vague, you know, the remedy that's been applied in all the cases is not simply to strike the condition, but for resentencing. The trial court can, if it sees fit, you know, on remand, if the case is remanded, rewrite either of these conditions to make them more specific, or eliminate them if on reconsideration the court decides that they're unnecessary. But as it stands, these constitutional challenges are not well-founded, and this judgment should be affirmed in its entirety.
Mr.
Turning to the paraphernalia condition, following up on Judge Applewick's point, if, as the state argues, that this term is perfectly understandable because there's a statutory definition of the term, then in the judgment sentence, reference the statute. That would dispel a vagueness problem here. Doesn't need to even include all the language of the statute. Just reference the statute, or reference the main language in that statute.
Why shouldn't we read this as requiring reference to the statute?
Because it's not there. We look at the condition as written, not how it could have been written. And contrary to the state,
the term is there. The only other place that term appears in the code is defining the crime.
Well, if we look at
this criminal conduct.
Well, with reference to that, I'll point this court's attention to Sanchez-Valencia, and especially the concurring opinion in that case, Justice James Johnson's concurring opinion. In Sanchez-Valencia, the defendant was convicted of a VUCSA offense, unlike here. And Justice Johnson, who, of course, historically has been considered the resident hardliner on defense issues in the Supreme Court, said, well, this condition would satisfy due process if the statute were actually cited in as part of the paraphernalia prohibition condition. But it wasn't there, and that's why Justice Johnson was concurred. Here we have a defendant who hasn't been convicted of a VUCSA offense, and where, how is he to know how the drug paraphernalia term is supposed to be ascertained? This court's decision in Moultrie, which I cited in the reply brief, is that reasoning in that case is applicable there. There the state had argued that a condition that prohibited contact with disabled or vulnerable adults or persons was unconstitutionally vague. The state argued, well, no, because there's statutory definitions of those terms. But this court remanded for clarification because the statute wasn't cited in the judgment sentence or as part of that no contact condition. And also, oh, yes.
I'm sorry. Did he answer your question? Mr. Brannis, would you quickly let him know a
I would say this court can do what it wants. I mean, in other words, there are cases where the court can just strike something. There are cases where it remands for clarification. If this court, in its judgment, thinks that clarification is the right course here, then that's fine. I mean, the main point is that if that clarification results in conditions that aren't unconstitutionally vague, then that's what Mr. Traylor wants. Thank you.